Hi Zwifters, I'm Simon Schofield and this is the Zwiftcast. I decided to start the Zwiftcast so that if you want, you can get your Zwifty news, discussions and debates in audio form. Perfect for listening to whilst on the trainer. So, who am I? Well, I spent much of my career in television production, and now I'm a freelance cycling journalist. But perhaps more importantly, I've been an enthusiastic indoor rider in winter for years. I spend a lot of time riding outdoors in summer, and like lots of you, I think what Zwift is doing is incredibly exciting for the colder, darker months. I'm a novice podcaster, but I'd love to hear what you'd love to hear in upcoming episodes. You can find me at zwiftcast.com or on the Facebook groups, and you can leave me voicemails on Skype at simon.schofield63. So, let's get on with episode 1 of the Zwiftcast. We've got a bit of Zwift-related news in a few moments, but here's what else is coming up. The man behind the Zwift workout mode test, coach John Sharples, talks us through how to get through an FTP test.
It is the most amount of power that you can sustain. So sustain is the key word for 20 minutes.
And speaking of power, what is Zwift chief exec Eric Min's FTP?
I have nothing to hide. I did my FTP test. I think I scored 274. I weigh 70 kilograms, so that puts me at 3.9 watts per kilogram.
Much, much more from Eric later in the Zwiftcast. I'm also talking to respected Zwifter Mick Neal about what we'd both like to see happen on the island and in Richmond. And we've got some tips and advice if you're racing or you'd like to get yourself on the start line for the first time. Let's catch up with a bit of news. Zwift has just announced they'll be sponsoring a women's pro team in the shape of the Canyon-SRAM racing setup. We can expect to see team members in the game, and they'll join the growing numbers of pro riders spotted Zwifting. Zwift are also forming a relationship with the MTN Quebeca team, and the sponsorship of the Canyon-SRAM racing team looks like a move to attract more female riders to Zwift. Eric Min has plenty to say about this issue later in the Zwiftcast. We'll also have an interview with Cassie Baldy, who's started ladies-only events with the aim of increasing female participation. Now, the Facebook groups have been alive with news and opinion, as ever, and the Zwiftcast will be regularly summarising some of the hotter topics for those who find the social media activity hard to keep up with. This episode, Shane Miller joins me for a catch-up. Hi, Shane. Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and your cycling history?
G'day, Simon. Thanks for having me on. At the competitive side, I'm really focused on time trials quite a lot. A lot of racing. I took it up a bit too late, so I've sort of gone to the masters racing scene and done pretty well throughout my progression there. And along the way, always using indoor trainers. Specific training outside of the road environment where there's cars, interruptions and weather and things like that. So I've used indoor training for many, many years. And I've used all different solutions, static videos to YouTube playlists to you name it, absolutely anything. And then along came the kicker, which sort of combined my love of technology and cycling. And then along came Zwift about 6 months ago, actually. It came out for the Mac. And the rest is online, I guess, in history.
Is it big in Australia, Zwift? I mean, we tend to think in the Northern Hemisphere that your weather's fantastic all the time, so why would you ride indoors?
Strangely enough, indoor cycling is actually very big in Australia. We ride a lot outdoors, absolutely, but I think everyone who's really serious about their sport will go indoors. They'll do the 30-minute session indoors because even if you've got a nice stretch of road or the sun's out, if you've only got 30 minutes, it takes 2 minutes to put your shoes on and go indoors. You don't have to worry about kitting up, getting your helmet on, all these other things that come into play. So it's actually disproportionately popular.
Interesting.
With the amount of cyclists we have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Shane, you're a respected voice in the Zwift community, so I thought I'd rope you in for a feature that really just looks at what's being talked about, mainly on the Facebook groups over the past couple of weeks, and kind of get your take on some of the big subjects. So let's start with something that came up that caught my interest, which was a bit of a debate, and it was what we were just talking about. Whether miles indoors are real miles in training terms. Some people, the kind of hardened clubman fraternity, tend to dismiss the value of indoor training. What's your take on that?
The old school will say no. For me, I say absolutely. I say one for one, they're equal. Some, I guess you can go down the path of there's no coasting indoors, but these days with Zwift and a smart trainer, there is a little bit. There's nothing like putting it in the 5311 down the Watopia Hill, and you don't really have to pedal a lot. I'd say they're one for one. And given the technology behind Zwift, I've actually taken, and don't tell anybody this, but I've taken Zwift outdoors. I've put a laptop in the backpack, and I went for a ride, real world, under same conditions. Not a lot of wind, few little rolling hills. For 30 kilometres, the only difference was 100 metres between the two compared. So it was taking the power from my cranks and the distance I rode. So that little experiment I did over in Perth, they're one for one for me, absolutely.
Yeah, I think most people who are serious about training have always seen the value of indoor training. Mm-hmm. It can be very focused. And the thing with Zwift is, and I'm not sure whether this is a benefit, but actually it's really difficult to go for an easy ride on Zwift. If you've got an ounce of competitiveness within you, it's very hard not to get drawn into little battles. And that leads me on to my next one, which is, can you use Zwift too much? Is it kind of possible to overtrain on Zwift?
Once you've got a carrot dangling in front of you, like that green jersey or the KOM jersey or the full lap jersey, you'll go really, really hard. It'll add that incentive to go super hard. As for can you overtrain, depending if you're doing long, long Ks indoors, very static, you can get a little bit sort of locked into the position and you'll get very tired very quickly. So I think it's possible, but as for the short 1 hour sessions a day, you'll struggle, you'll overreach, but if you recover well, you'll be able to do that day in, day out. So one thing you just have to watch for is, you know, are you pushing yourself too hard too many days in a row? There's always got to be a rest day thrown in there.
Yeah, I think that's the key, really. I mean, I've raced on Zwift over winter more mm-hmm. than I ever would have done before, which was, you know, like hardly at all, because there's very little scope for racing in the Northern Hemisphere winter. Is it healthy, do you think, to carry on racing all year round, which is something that Zwift encourages?
For me, I'm evergreen. I will race all year round, with a week off here and there. But you just have to be careful, not too much all the time. You cannot be on top of your game 365 days a year, not at all. And you've got to enjoy it as well. So there's got to be days where you turn off a little bit and smell the roses or look for the squirrels, I guess, on Zwift.
Good advice. Mm-hmm. We are seeing, and I've experienced this personally a couple more glitches than we're used to seeing. Do you think the guys are handling the big increase in capacity technically to a satisfactory standard? Are we seeing too many glitches? And again, this has come up in the groups that people are reporting kind of frustrating occurrences. Are you seeing much of that?
I don't quite know what's going on in the back end, but me, from a technical perspective, when that happens, you look at the logs, look at the capacity, look at where the issues actually lie, and then just crank up the capacity. So I use the app quite a lot. Look, I'll be honest, I'm addicted to loading the app and giving everyone a thumbs up, and I saw there was about 300 to 400 people on today. On a day-to-day basis, to have nearly 300 to 400 people on and it not being too bad, I think they're doing a pretty good job. But they just have to be sure that it's on 24/7. People get so, endurance cyclists are very passionate, very, very passionate people. So if they can't log in and do their Zwift session, you'll hear about it.
Yeah, I think if you're set up to train and you've got your shoes on and you're ready for a hard hour and some kind of technical hassle gets in the way, your reaction tends to be a bit sort of disproportionate.
For sure. We're also seeing that with the updates as well. Now, again, from a technical side, we can all understand the updates and pushing updates. But if you've got a small bandwidth connection or somebody else is using your connection, you have to wait 15 minutes before you start pedaling. That can be a bit frustrating. So it'd be interesting to see in the future what they do.
Yeah. I guess with something like Zwift, which is very innovative, you've got to expect some growing pains and some minor teething troubles. And perhaps people on the groups ought to be a little more understanding, maybe.
No one's had 1,000 cyclists on a cycling server before because there hasn't been one of these. Mm. So they're actually breaking new ground, which I give them a lot of slack for, without a doubt, because, it's very unique. They're pioneers.
Absolutely. Anything that's caught your eye on the groups over the past couple of weeks?
One of the latest ones was the drafting effect. Now, I was online the other day with on the Ted King ride, and it was just a casual ride. It wasn't a race. Off we go, riding along with Ted King. Anyway, Ted King gets dropped, and he's trying to ride back on, but the front group keep pulling away, and we're only doing 2.5, 3 watts per kilo. Which is a solid pace, a good tempo pace, but anybody can sort of pull that back. It seems to be the physics model is a little bit generous for the bunches at the moment, and they're still playing with that on Zwift. There's been a few changes made lately which have caused even more problems. So what they're trying to do is model the outside world. But at the end of the day, it's still a game, and if you know how that actually works, you can play the game. And I think the rule at the moment is never, ever get dropped from the front group. Never. It's
never
so hard to get
back on.
Never
lose the draft. Never, ever lose the draft, otherwise you're dead, as even Ted King found out. Shane, it's been fantastic chatting to you. I hope we can make this a regular feature. It's great to hear from Zwift Australia. Thanks very much indeed for your time, and thanks very much for your contribution to the Zwiftcast.
No worries, Simon. I look forward to the future editions. There's a lot to talk about. We've got 6 months of discussions to catch up on, and I'm sure we'll have many, many months of discussions in the future about where it's going and where it's headed.
I had a long chat with Eric Min, the chief exec and co-founder of Zwift, and I think one of the advantages of a podcast like this is you don't need to condense these types of longer conversations into short sound bites. But I covered a whole lot of ground with Eric, so I am going to break it up and scatter it through this first episode of the Zwiftcast. Here's the first part. Just who is Eric Min? Eric, we know you raced a bit as a junior, but I'm sure people are really interested in knowing a bit more about you. Tell us a bit about yourself, both as a cyclist and a person.
I've been a long time cycling enthusiast since I was probably 13 years old. Picked up cycling through a friend and quickly joined a local club in New York where I grew up. And during, I guess it was about 3 or 4 years of racing as a junior, I got to competitive on a national level. I took cycling pretty seriously, it was only until I realized that I didn't have the kind of talent that some of the riders around me had, I decided that I probably should focus on a career. So I started a career in banking and technology. My partner and I built a trading platform, trading system for the financial and the commodities markets. We actually sponsored a U25 team, which then grew to become part of the Garmin development team. Out of our program, which lasted 5 years, we graduated 7 professionals, and 2 of them are active World Tour riders. It allowed me to stay connected with the sport that I've loved for so many years.
What I can see there is the threads that have been pulled together to create Zwift. You've clearly got some IT experience. You've got a passion for cycling. Was Zwift always part of the plan?
I exited my last venture last March. So I've been looking for months about, okay, what am I going to do next? And the last place I looked at was the cycling space. Although my partner, who is not a cyclist, egged me on to look at cycling because I had so much vested interest in that industry and the sport. In the absence of any better idea, I thought, okay, let me take another crack at cycling. At the same time, I've been living in London and struggling to ride outside. So I've been confined to my man cave for a few years now, and I've consumed all the different products that are out there, and none of them were satisfactory. So I thought, wow, what if we could make indoor cycling fun? Things like social networks, or the gaming technology, or the fact that you can be in a virtual space with others, or you're having a platform where you could be in a space with thousands of people, not just 10 or 20 people. So we spent 2 years, Scott Barger and I spent 2 months, traveling to Europe and North America to find out if this might be of interest to partners to be part of this project. And it was interesting. We got some great feedback. So it was enough for us to seed the business and take it from there. So that was actually, we pulled the team together April of last year. So it's only been about a year and a half.
And more from Eric later.
Francis Coppics, Casey Shum, this is a strong, strong group of riders today. A lot of the big hitters have shown up for today's ZTR Early Boards or UK Europe race. And this is quite a group of riders, actually.
That was the fantastic Nathan Guerra with some of his inspired race commentary, which he streams live on Twitch during Zwift races. If you want to find out more, head for twitch.tv/NathanGuerra. And Guerra is GUERRA. We'll get Nathan on to the next episode of the Zwiftcast. But in the meantime, let's take a look at the racing scene on Zwift. And this interview with James Gill has lots of tips for those who've not yet entered a race. Welcome to the Zwiftcast to James Gill, who will be a very familiar name to anybody who races on Zwift, as he's one of the primary UK organisers of Tuesday and Thursday races, as well as some on Friday. James, we estimate, or Zwift estimate, that only around 10% of the user base race. What can we say to the other 90% to encourage them into the racing fold?
You're going to get better if you have someone to push off against. Even just good-natured competition, you're going to push that little bit harder, and that actually makes it fun. It's what this is all about.
But some people find competition intimidating. Should they be intimidated by the competition on Zwift?
We recently ran the Fox and Hound race. The Foxes were trying to stay ahead of the Hounds. They set off 5 minutes before, and the Hounds had to chase them down. The Foxes that crossed the line first, they did brilliantly. They slogged their guts out. But every single Fox, it didn't matter if they're a court or not, still had fun going around, because you've got that competitive aspect. Rather than just, I'm going for a loop round, I'm going to see how far I can get. Can I do something against this group of, people who are chasing me down?
I think one of the things that's attractive about racing on Zwift is it's not just one race. There are different categories. Talk us through how that works.
Well, we've got the categories based upon what people think that they're putting out in terms of their wattages. And that's how much power a rider is able to produce. And that's given us four categories that Christian Weidman's sort of brought over from real world racing. If I set myself up as a B rider, I'm probably not going to be able to keep up with the pack the whole way around. And actually, it gets a little bit demoralizing. If I put myself in as a C category rider, then I'm going to be able to keep up with people at a similar level, because we've got an idea as to what wattage we're expecting someone like that to put out. Using the categories can actually help you have an enjoyable race ride without feeling that you're completely against people who are far beyond your leg capabilities.
You'll toggle between B and C. In Zwift etiquette terms, is that Is that perfectly acceptable?
Absolutely, because it's about getting out there. Any time that's time on Zwift, any time that's on the bike, is actually a win. One of the things we talk about sometimes at work, because I'm a medic, is your couch is trying to kill you. You know, get out of your chair, do something. You're still competing. You're still winning compared to someone that hasn't.
What are the most common mistakes that you see first-time racers make, and how should they avoid them?
I think the biggest thing is setting your sights too high, thinking that I'm going to compete with some of the big names like Frank Garcia and Casey Shoom. So you've got an idea that you think that you're going to be able to hold out over 300 watts for over an hour. Definitely, first crack, go for it. But it gets really hard work if you're chasing them, you burn a match, you're pushing all the while, whereas they've not actually dropped the hammer yet. When they decide to leave you, you end up left on your own, and you end up basically doing a 45-minute, half-an-hour TT on your own, which is quite uncomfortable because you've not got the other riders to push off and bounce off. You don't get the draft effect. And it's possible that that's the sort of thing that could stop you coming back next time. I think it's always better to push, go down a category, what you think you might be. You can race with someone who's higher if you're keeping up with them, but you're not setting your sight at an untested challenge.
I think that's very sensible advice, and that's tactical advice about riding a race. But I think some people don't really have a clue kind of where to start. Where should I go? What should I do? Just talk us through the 5 minutes before the race starts for a first timer. What should they be doing?
So I'll normally log in 20 minutes before a race to start making sure that my kit's set up and start, you know, welcoming other riders as they pop in. As we move to the last 10 minutes of the race, I'm starting to send out global communications to everyone on the island saying the ZTREB's about to start in 10 minutes. You know, come along to the start line, explaining how many laps we'll be doing, if it's 3, 4, 5 laps, explaining where the neutral sections are going to be, so we have a nice steady warm-up to make sure everyone's kit's working and that everyone's managed to get in the ride at the same time. That lets everybody catch up. And then explaining where the go point will be, where the hammer really drops and everybody shoots off. If you see any of those things and think, I'd like to come along, simply turn up on the start line with everyone else. We shout what the start time is going to be. As long as you stay behind the race leader in the neutral, who's normally identified in his name, that's all you need for the start. If you find that you've pushed too hard over one lap and want to drop out, that's great. You've started off with the race. Come back next week. They run every week. Try to get a little bit further.
Yep. All good stuff. James, do you think racing on Zwift is going to continue to grow?
I'm sure it will do. And the number of things that could come out of Zwift racing moving forwards is absolutely colossal. I mean, the Zwift guys, they have more ideas. The actual teams that have built Zwift have more ideas than they have hours in the day at the moment. I guarantee that racing will become a big thing in Zwift, in both the unofficial capacity that it is at the minute and in an official capacity when the race module actually gets launched, hopefully later on in the year, start of 2016.
James, thank you very much indeed for your time. Thank you for talking to the listeners of the Zwiftcast. Thank you for organising all the races that you do. And we look forward to seeing you on the start line.
Not at all. And in terms of that, I'd like to thank everyone that turns up. At the end of the day, a race is just simply a Facebook event and someone shouting go. The races don't work if the riders don't come. And thanks to everybody who turns up for them. They're the ones that make it entertaining and fun.
As James was saying there, the racing is dependent on its participants, and very few of those are female. It's something that Zwift is well aware of and is working to change. Here's the head honcho, Eric Min, on female participation on the platform.
In terms of percentages, I would say that 92% are men, 8% are women. And we'd like to see that percentage of women grow. And if you speak to the industry, over the next 5 years, they all believe that half the buyers will be women. So there's a big push within the industry to create product lines that are catering to ladies. And so I think I think I'd like to think that we can help, you know, support that growth. It's an easy place to get started, where you can build fitness. And there's a lot of things you can learn on Zwift, things like etiquette, right? I mean, there's no handbook about, you know, how do you behave in a group ride, or and I think a lot of those things apply even on Zwift. And there's so fitness and how to behave in a social group rides can be learned on the platform.
And one Zwifter who's taking a lead in this area is Cassie Baldy.
So hello and welcome to the Zwiftcast to Cassie Baldy, who's recently started a ladies-only group on Facebook with the aim of encouraging more women to cycle on Zwift. But first of all, Cassie, just tell us a little bit about yourself, and in particular your cycling history and how you came across Zwift.
I'm 27 and I am a very keen cyclist. Started off indoor cycling, so spinning. My husband then encouraged me to try out cycling outside. He got me my first road bike, and then he said, oh, were you going to come out to the Alps? I've only been cycling for about a month or so. So he said, I'll come out to the Alps and try out some riding. Really enjoyed it. First descent, I come off my bike.
Oh no.
But I got back on. That was all good. And then he said, right, get you going doing a sportif out in France. And we did the sportif, and I come dead last out of the win. Dead last. It was my first one. I'd never done anything like this before. And then from there, 6 years later, after that, I'm still cycling. I'm still enjoying it. I've got stronger from building and proper training. And this year I managed to come first in my age group and first overall in a sportif over there, which I'm really happy with.
Oh, congratulations. That's a fantastic journey from dead last to first. Tell me why you started the Ladies Only Facebook group.
For me, I can see why women would get discouraged, because men are fast, men are strong, and men have got, I mean, you know, I'm probably, you know, I'm strong, but I still come last in some of the races. So if I'm discouraged, then I'm sure there's other women out there that are going to be discouraged. And I thought, well, if we gather a community together of women, then we can encourage each other to take part in these races and these even group rides. And then we can sort of get the process rolling of getting more women out there.
Good idea. And what reaction did you get on announcement? I know there was a little bit of opposition, but let's concentrate on the positive. How many women responded, and what kind of response did you get?
I got well over 100 women responding to my request of starting a group, and they've joined. So I have over 100 women now on the Facebook group.
And what kind of things were they saying to you?
They felt like they wasn't fast enough. They felt like it was quite a male-dominated thing. And they just wanted to feel like they were in a community and feel welcome. And they said to me, once I set it up, I got lots of sort of messages saying, thank you for this. I feel like I'm integrated. I can talk openly with other women. And it's not just about women's stuff. It's just generally feeling that they are accepted in the community, rather than feeling like there's all these people, even if other men, just like bombarding with all these posts about this and this and this. Well, we just want to post about our achievements, and maybe we just want to be felt like we are doing the right thing, and a bit more training advice specific to women, because we are different. I mean, there's never going to be a group race in the pro peloton with women and men together. We are different. We're not the same. We are slower. We're not going to be Tour de France. I mean, women seem to be too scared to put forward their thoughts, because always they get the men sort of say this and this and this.
Do you think that this could be a springboard for trying to increase the numbers of women in total on Zwift? Because 8% is a surprisingly low figure.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm getting women who are not even on Zwift into my group now, to encourage them to go and do training indoors. Now, especially the season is changing. Even if it's 50 women and they're on Zwift, and then they tell their friends, because it's going to be more of a social experience for women than it is going to be for men. I think they want to be felt like they're wanted in the community rather than men, where they just go for it and drive. So knowing other women are involved in it, then it encourages the ones that are not involved to give it a go.
Well, I think the vast majority of the Zwift community would applaud you for what you're doing and support you in your efforts. So congratulations, the best of luck with it, and thanks very much for talking to the Zwiftcast.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for having me on there.
Coming up, a really useful suite of advice from Coach John Sharples on how to prepare for and complete an FTP test. And we've got an interview with long-standing Zwifter Christian Wiedemann. But now for a bit of fun, I got together with Mick Neal, a guy who's been on Zwift since the very beginning, for a bit of a moan. We wanted to vent a little about stuff we'd really like to see on Zwift that's not on Zwift yet. So welcome to the Zwiftcast to Mick Neal, who is based in the Chicago area. And I thought it might be fun and possibly interesting to talk to him about how Zwift has developed and how it may develop in the future. But first of all, Mick, welcome. And why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself and how you use Zwift and how you cycle in real life?
Let's see. Best place to start. Well, Chicago winters can be pretty brutal. So most people hole up in their basements here. Also, when Zwift came on the scene, I jumped on it. And seems to be the solution to all my problems. The one thing I'd like to see fixed, though, is the few little bugs that have hung on from, you know, update after update after update. It's not a major thing. It's just niggling. And I think most people have adapted to just seeing them there and letting them go. But you get the newbies coming on and you get a lot of, I guess you could call it, whinging about it.
Yeah, well, I've got a few pet whinges as well. So why don't we have a little bit of a whinge fest and go through some of the niggles and bugs that annoy us and perhaps speculate about why they're not fixed. What's your least favorite niggle?
Oh, changing the name in the game. So once you're in game and let's say you're running late to join a group ride and you need to put that suffix on your name.
Yeah.
So many people complaining, I can't make a change. It does show up for everybody else, but you know, unless you see it, you don't know if it actually took. So that's an easy one there, I think.
Okay, well, my next one is based around the workup mode, which has been a successful launch, I think, and a very welcome addition to the options on Zwift, and lots of people are using it. But I wish that they would have a power smoothing option, a 3-second power smoothing option.
Yes, that's been, I've heard about that from day one. I mean, anybody that rides with power knows you need that at least three second smoothing, and it would make quite a difference.
And we see lots of questions from new starters saying my powers are leaping around all over the place. So I think that would be a really welcome fix.
Yeah. Now, I don't notice it as much on a kicker. I actually have a Tax Bushido that I'm setting up for somebody, so I was testing it, and that jumped around a little bit, but compared to the kicker was actually very smooth compared to that. So I don't know if it's probably a trainer specific issue. It would actually help a lot in group rides too, because when you're trying to stay in the draft, that does make a big difference.
Yes, I agree. Okay, well, in this niggle contest, next round to you.
The weight rounding bug. People who use kilograms may not see it, but if you put your weight in pounds, it rounds it down every time. Mm. And I think that was there since day one.
Mm. Well, weight is a sensitive issue on Zwift. Let's not go there. Okay, well, my next one I think is also perhaps going to strike a chord with lots of people listening. Why can't you reciprocate ride-ons much more easily?
Especially if you miss the name, then you have to go online and see who gave you the ride-on. But it would be nice to immediately give a ride-on. Speaking of that, I found a fresh bug. Every time I log in, I get a ride-on from C. Whalen, as soon as I log in, every single time now, probably about 15 times on in a row.
I've seen other people have had that bug.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, I should say that this it probably does sound to people a bit like a whinge fest. But, you know, I mean, I absolutely love riding on Zwift, and it has completely revolutionized my indoor experience. So Zwift has got an awful lot right.
Oh, yeah. No, as a core platform, I think it's hard to beat. I mean, I overlook all the bugs. It's just, you know, when you actually notice them, or more of the fact when somebody else points them out again, you know, for the 100th time, it's like, oh, I'd just forgotten about that. And then you remind me about it again. But I mean, it's completely changed my riding, because I end my work day by jumping on the bike and doing a good solid hour every day. And that just, it's changed completely. I think the max I could get on before was maybe 45 minutes without being bored out of my skull.
Mm. And how valuable a training tool do you think Zwift is for real life racing?
It's actually great. I really started putting in miles on last February on Zwift, and that's when it was Jarvis Island with this really steep, punchy climbs, which those made for serious intervals. And I think the first, it was probably the second race of the season, I actually ended up taking second in a race that had a long quarter-mile sprint section, just because I'd had that sustained power building and was actually peaking early in the season based off of, you know, all those Zwifting in the winter. The challenge this year is going to be how to split my season into early season and, you know, mid to late season.
And how realistic a race experience do you think Zwift is able to offer?
I think it's very realistic. The only issue I have currently is, and it's evolved, and they're actually starting to separate it now, is there's big gaps in between rider abilities.
Yeah.
And it was always the fact that you would see people just burn themselves out trying to hang on one lap when that's not a race, and it doesn't really benefit them to go that hard for one lap, and then basically it's junk miles after that for their next hour and a half.
Not everybody races, and let's get back to talking about stuff which may have a broader interest.
Right.
The workout mode, I think, has been successful. I would like to see a couple of things on that, and a couple of people have talked about it too, which is audio cues. How do you feel about that?
I would really like audio cues, because I think half the time, especially in training mode, I'm on autopilot. I'm just keeping an eye on because I'm in erg mode, I can actually keep my cadence where it should be and, you know, multitask and basically take my mind off the actual training if I need to. Just still get a good base training, but do other stuff at the same time. So a cue would be great.
What else would you like to see them add to workout mode?
It would be nice to pause a workout.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people that just, they absolutely have to jump off the trainer. I think I've got about half my workouts on, I'm doing the 12-week FTP where it just, about half of them don't show as completed because something happened, either the computer crashed or I had to jump off. So I think some sort of pause mode or restart mode to allow you to finish the workout would be great.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would welcome that.
Actually, the other big thing would be a calibration course. So some sort of course where you're forced to like do a lap and make sure everything's working properly.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, that's a big one, because there's just too many people that jump on the island when there's their kid isn't sorted, basically. And so, and plus, once you're on a closed course, Zwift could actually do some checks and, you know, tweak the algorithm a little bit for feedback.
I'm sure they're working on lots of these things. Thank you very much indeed for your time, Mick. It's been really entertaining and interesting to talk to you, and I'll see you on the island.
Great. Thank you, Simon.
I'm putting some specific points and others the community is asking about to Zwift Big Cheese Eric Min later on. But first, let's hear from Eric on how he himself feels Zwift is shaping up in general a few weeks out of its beta phase. I think the platform has faced its first real test in the past few weeks. How do you think you're doing?
I think we're doing really well. We hit, I will tell you that we hit almost 800 simultaneous users at the peak on Tuesday. So every day since we launched has been a record day for that day. So yesterday was the record Wednesday. Tuesday was the record Tuesday. Monday was the record Monday. Wow. So we've been breaking records every single day.
How long can that go on?
I think it can go on for some time. So we expect the busiest season, the peak, to take place in January. So we expect there to be plenty of growth from here on. We just started, right? And a lot of what we're doing is very organic.
But as numbers have grown, we have seen a few more glitches. I personally have seen more glitches in my rides than I've seen in 9, 10, 11, 12 months of riding on the beta program. Is there a capacity issue for Zwift, or is it a whole lot more complicated than that?
It's not capacity. It had more to do with just a bug on the client, actually, on the bug. The last one that we stumbled on was some sort of limit having to do with the leaderboards. So that was addressed. That had nothing to do with the capacity. In fact, the servers are humming along pretty well. So we're pretty pleased with that, and we've rolled out a cluster so we can scale the capacity as on demand. We use cloud services, so firing up additional servers is a trivial task for us now.
But presumably you're bug stamping kind of the whole time at the moment.
Some of the things that we're still fine-tuning is around drafting.
Yeah.
And it's a tricky one because what you don't have on Zwift are brakes. People ride in a pack and tether their brakes to stay behind someone, and we have to simulate all that. So we're actively testing one that has more refinements to the drafting, and I think I hope that will go out today or tomorrow, and I think people will be pretty pleased with the latest tweaks that we're making. But we're constantly fine-tuning changes to the behavior, which is, a fluid dynamics is pretty hard thing to solve.
Sure. No. I mean, I can see that getting the draft right must be fiendishly difficult.
Yeah.
Did you feel that the tech support that you're able to provide, and again, we need to keep this in proportion, you know, you're still a relatively small company, but do you think the help desk and tech support that you can provide is sufficient to meet the demand in this very important time for you?
I think we're always playing catch up. The community, what's great about what we have with Zwift is the power of the community. Sometimes community can solve problems that some of the users have before we can even get to it. I think our team it's a small team, and it's based out of California. We have users in 140 different places. People are using Zwift 24/7. There's no way we can respond to all the queries. So I think the more experienced users are going to the community first. And if it's something that the community can't solve, then they will open a ticket with us. Do we wish we had more capacity on our side? Absolutely, and it will happen. But I would encourage people to tap into the community, because more than not, they will run across an issue that has already been encountered and solved.
How many people are working for Zwift, Eric, at the moment?
We're under 50. We have a small team in London, small team in New York. We have the largest team out of California, where all the game and mobile development come out of. We have a team in Rio de Janeiro that focuses on the back end, the servers. And we've got a small presence in Tokyo to help us cover the Asian as a region. The company is up 24/7. It's exhausting.
Yeah, I can imagine. Does the roadmap call for quite substantial increases in staff, or is this always going to be a company that's run on a fairly low input from human beings?
I think we've got the core team to take us to the to the next level. Mm. I think you will see more growth at the company. There is just no shortage of things that we can be doing, and there are opportunities that we just can't chase at the moment because we just don't have the bandwidth for that.
I just want to just switch subject a little bit, and I remember you told me months ago when Zwift was in its early stages that you were an entertainment company that catered to cyclists. Are you still an entertainment company, or are you going to be a training fitness company, or are you going to be a bit of both?
Well, I think we are a bit of both. We needed to focus on what consumers are used to, which is you ride indoors to get fit. You ride indoors because you're focused on some sort of training plan. And I think we need to, that's what people are used to in terms of indoor riding. And I think on the back of that, we can create all sorts of entertainment values. So I'll give you an example. Tuesday night was a very, very busy night for us. There were 100 people logged in just to watch other people ride.
Wow.
Yeah, they're we call them lurkers. So you don't see their names on the riders list, but we can track that. And so we've been measuring how many hours people have been logging in to watch gameplay, and it's in the tens of thousands of hours. And this is consistent with the gaming industry. There are many people who tune in to watch the top gamers play. It's been going on for a number of years. Imagine the Tuesday night races. Nathan Guerra does a wonderful job of commentating. But once we have the tools in place for a professional commentator like Matt Stevens or Dan Lloyd or Carlton Kirby or Phil Liggett and Paul Sherwin, have these guys come in and commentate live while the Tuesday night races are happening, where our communities, they're the stars of the event, right? I think this is fun. This is something you wouldn't get anywhere else.
Yeah. So Zwift has an element of also being a spectator sport as well as a participation sport.
Yes. So if you're not riding, there's no reason why you can't tune in to watch other people ride. And I think that's where the part of the entertainment comes in.
More from Eric later. Now, one thing on Zwift that's not exactly entertaining is the FTP test. It's useful, but it's not a whole lot of fun. What's the best way to tackle this significant challenge? Listen to this. So welcome to the Zwiftcast to John Sharples of trainsharp.co.uk, a noted coach and the man who is the power behind a lot of the workouts in Zwift workout mode. And today I wanted to talk to John about FTP testing, which, as we know, has been incredibly popular on Zwift. So, John, let's kick off really with a basic question. Why take an FTP test?
Well, really, I think if you're considering taking out a training plan, you have to draw a line in the sand. And cycling, as we all know, is not an easy sport. It is pretty tough. So essentially what you're going to do by undertaking an FTP test is create your training zones. You need to know where your fitness lies today so that any training that you undertake can be tailored to your personal fitness.
Indeed. So we're thinking of doing an FTP test. How is it best to prepare?
Well, you're going to need some mental visual training techniques, I believe, because it is tough. You want to see yourself doing well. You need to get it right in your head why you're going to do it. You know, maybe it's so that, you know, later on, you know, you won't get dropped on the climb and you'll be the hammer and not the nail, as a lot of people say. The best way to prepare yourself for it really is not to do anything too exhaustive 48 hours beforehand. You can't cheat the test. You can certainly make things worse for yourself by doing too much training, thinking you're going to make yourself stronger. I mean, it is what it is. If you're tired, you will suffer. So I would say treat it like a race and just some light, steady spins 24 hours before you undergo the test.
Should you eat immediately before a gel, or should you have a little carb snack an hour before? What would you advise?
Well, everyone's different. I think it's good to have your blood sugar levels up so you feel motivated and feel like you have the fuel to
to do your best. You know, rule of thumb, you shouldn't really eat anything heavy 3 hours before doing this. You know, certainly have a gel or a bar or a carbohydrate drink maybe before you warm up. As I say, everyone's different, but I think the important thing is not to feel lightheaded and make sure you feel like you have some fuel in the tank before you undergo the test.
Sure. Is there a best time of day to do the test, or is that an individual thing? I know I go better in the afternoons. I'm a bit groggy in the mornings.
Yeah, I think that's personal. It's a really good question, actually. I think everyone's different. Some people are morning people. They wake up and, you know, they think they can make $1 million, you know, by 10 a.m. Other people are a bit better in the afternoon. So I think it should suit you. If you're a morning person and you usually train in the morning, then do it in the morning. You know, if you're tired by the end of the day, then you may not feel like you've got the get up and go. But I would, as long as you're fresh and you're psyched up for it, I don't think it really matters.
Excellent. Good advice. Now, pacing is something that people agonise about in an FTP test. So, you know, let's ask the question that a lot of people pose. Is this full gas the whole way?
It is the most amount of power that you can sustain. So sustain is the key word for 20 minutes. So if you start off full gas, what's going to happen is you're just going to end up pulling funny faces. The lactate's going to build and build. You're trying to remove the hydrogen ions from the blood. The only way to do that effectively is breathe faster. You're already at full breathing rate. So you'll just be pulling funny faces and the power will be drifting away. So I would say don't start full gas. I would say start very, very steady and build into it. And I think after 10 minutes, you should start to really feel the effort. So the first 10 minutes, you know, you may be thinking, I haven't started hard enough. And I assure you, by the time you get to 10 or 12 minutes, you definitely feel that you're in sort of TT mode. And that's where, you know, you end up battling with the mental gremlins, if you like. You feel like giving up, or, you know, you're really struggling and you have to lower the power a little bit to finish it. It is what it is, you know, the test. And I think with becoming familiar to doing the test, you can pace it better. So it depends how familiar you are with it. So full gas, I would say, is definitely not the answer. It would just get horribly messy.
Can you vary your pace through the test? So can you give yourself a minute where you just back off a little bit from that hard, sustainable effort and bring it back up again as you start to have a minor recovery?
I think with the length of duration, you're going to naturally do that anyway. As I say, some people, you know, understand this is a tough sport. Taking the tests are very, very hard mentally. There may be a stage where you do daydream a little bit and your power does wander. But I personally believe steady state is the way forward. Just hold a, you know, a steady power, steady level, and just see if you can gently squeeze it up in the last, you know, closing minutes.
Indeed, and that again leads me on to my next question. Should you give it absolutely everything you've got left in the last couple of minutes?
Yeah, definitely, because I think that makes you feel like you had a good workout, it was true to yourself, and you gave it all you had there. I think if you're, you know, not in an exhausted state once the test is over, you might be feeling disappointed. But as I say, it is what it is. So a bit like, you know, a 10-mile time trial, a 16-kilometer time trial, you would be able to sort of pick it up to the line. So I would say that I think you only really have the last 90 seconds where you could squeeze it out at full gas. If you start trying too hard, maybe 3 or 4 minutes to go, again, it would just get messy. So as long as you feel confident that you can just squeeze the power up a little bit, and 5 watts is quite a lot of power. You know, 10 watts of average power could be 45 seconds fast or slower for most people in a 16-kilometer or 10-mile time trial. So although it doesn't seem very much on indoor trainer when you're producing numbers, the effect out on the road is huge. So, you know, 5 to 10 watts is quite a lot to lift the power.
Sure. And you alluded to this a little bit at the beginning, but any kind of motivational tricks that just help you get through? What is a tough 20 minutes?
Yeah, it is. It's really tough. I guess, you know, this is you, you know, taking up a training program. So you've already decided why you want to do this and you're walking down the path. I think by learning to suffer, you're going to toughen up your mind, and it will become, you know, an enjoyable pain later on. the FTP test is long, so it's best to break it into chunks. Some people like to just listen to music all the way through and you know, set an alarm clock or a countdown timer to let them know when it's finished. But I used to always see myself, you know, not getting dropped on the climb. You know, for me, my goal was to make sure I could climb. And I knew I needed to hit these power numbers and then later lose the weight. So as long as, you know, I knew in my head why I was doing it, I was happy to suffer.
Sure. That visualization trick can be a good one, I think, can't it?
Yeah, definitely.
How often should you put yourself through this agony? How often should you retest?
It's a good idea to retest at the end of each training block, where, you know, one, to see the improvements, and two, just to keep you motivated, I think, really. I think a well-trained rider would be lucky if they see a movement of 15 to 20 watts in one season. I think, you know, the beginner or novice rider may improve 30 watts, may improve 50 watts. It really depends where they're coming from, but I've seen someone improve 130 watts in a year, but they were brand new to the sport. So it's great for motivation, especially if you're starting to pay attention to other people's numbers and, of course, the watts per kilo game that people like to play.
Sure. And indeed, other people's numbers brings me on to my my last question.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on the great debate? Should you post your FTP on social media?
Well, I think that depends on how you're made up mentally, whether you are ready for, you know, people throwing tomatoes, I always say. Your numbers are personal to you, depending on, you know, the size of the person you are. So if you're a lighter person, then of course your powers will be lower. If you're heavier, your numbers would be a lot higher. Really, I think it depends on the watts per kilo side of things.
Sure. John, there's some absolutely fantastic wisdom there, and I'm sure if people listen to that, they'll be really well prepared for an FTP test if they've not done one before, or even pick up a few tips if they're veterans of that particular agony. John Sharples from trainsharp.co.uk, thank you very, very much indeed for your time, and I'm sure a lot of people will find that incredibly useful. Thanks for contributing to the Zwiftcast.
Thank you, Simon.
Workout mode has been very popular since it launched a few weeks ago. Where's this part of Zwift heading next? I put some of your questions to Eric Min.
I think the first thing you'll see is the ability for you to create your own workouts. And so that, I think, will be available to users fairly soon. And I think the other thing I'd like to mention is that once you've created these custom workouts, you'll be able to easily share it with others. So we can quickly build up a library of thousands of workouts. The reality is that, you know, when it comes to structured training, you only need a handful of workouts that you're you know, used to doing. But if people want to share, that's something that will make very easy to do going forward. So that's the first thing. But in terms of where workout mode can go, I mean, it just, you know, use your imagination. I mean, we can do so much with it. The obvious one would be, you know, to be able to train with have a virtual training partner. Mm. You know, how fun would it be to be able to go out and ride with your virtual training partner, draft him. and program him. And so that's sort of the obvious one.
How close is that, Eric? How close, really, realistically, how close is that?
I think it, you know, technically that's not terribly difficult. I think it's just a question of, is that more important than doing something else?
Okay, let's talk about cheating. If competitive riding is to have any meaning on Zwift, and I think many of the people who ride on the island would like that to be so, the deliberate cheats have to be rooted out. How can that be done? I talked to Christian Wiedemann, who's organised and takes part in the very popular Tuesday and Thursday races.
Every now and then we have somebody who joins the race who rides beyond human levels. And at that point, there's a tricky situation of, you know, wanting to encourage people to join, but also not wanting unreasonable performances to be part of the race.
My experience of it is that these things are becoming much more effectively self-policed by the community, and it's pointed out to people on group text that perhaps they need to calibrate their trainer a little more accurately. Do you think it will always be a self-police situation, or do you think there is a way to defeat that technologically?
I think technologically there is no way to guarantee that somebody is not has not tweaked their setup if they want to do it intentionally. So I think racing on Zwift, at least the way that we run the races right now, will always be fairly low key. The way I see these races, it's not so much a formalized, you know, race series. It's more like a few people getting together to have a training race, like we do at industrial parks out here.
Much more from Christian in the next episode of the Zwiftcast. But I wondered, can Zwift do more to counter cheats? I asked Eric Min.
The simple answer is no, but can we reduce it? I think the answer is yes. And we'll be rolling out very, very soon ways of doing that. We've been testing it internally. Actually, we've been testing it behind the scenes, and so we think the data is pretty good. The cheating is, I would categorize into two. I mean, there probably are people who are cheating. Guess what? It's no surprise. It happens in all places.
Yeah, there are people miscalibrating.
Right.
Well.
And I'd say the vast majority of the users just have chosen the wrong trainers or are just not calibrated properly. And we try to reach out to those users directly just to support them. But we definitely have a way of detecting when someone is going unnaturally fast, and then there are ways for us to make sure that they don't affect leaderboards or even, I think, going forward, rides and events. So absolutely, we do. Although we don't flag those users today, I can tell you on a daily basis we're catching them.
Interesting. Zwift, yeah. Zwift is watching you.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting. We'll see what happens. That's almost it for the first episode of the Zwiftcast, but there's one meaty chunk left. We know there's lots of new stuff coming on Zwift. What we don't know is when it's coming. So as politely as possible, I tried to pin down Eric on some specifics. I think he tried his best to be as helpful as possible. You can judge for yourself. Will there be an option to choose which course you can ride on in the near future?
Yes, in the near future. I would say that's driven largely by the size of the community. Whenever we feel that the course is getting too busy is probably when we should start offering simultaneous courses.
Okay. Could you say when that might be?
I think it will happen in the next, possibly in the next 2 months, okay. I would say. Okay. It really depends on how quickly the community grows.
Sure. Well, that's quite precise. Any plans for a velodrome?
We've talked about it, and we're talking to velodrome track event promoters. Because there are lots of interesting things we can do with track promoters. My question is whether or not consumers might find it dull to be fixed on a 250-meter track virtually. And my second question is, like, how many people can you actually accommodate? You probably wouldn't want more than 50 riders on a track at any given time. So then now we're talking about having multiple rooms, right? Where you can do your track, or have a very limited number of users on there. It could be a private track, so it poses all sorts of other questions for us internally in terms of how we would make that available to users. But I'd say long term, yes. Short term, it's not the highest priority.
Fine. Okay, that's a nice and clear answer. Yeah. Is there a risk with adding new courses that we dilute the social aspects because riders are thinned out across two or three at any one time?
We think so. I think most cyclists are social. Most cyclists go to, you know, go to places where it's safe and popular. I continue to believe that people show up on Zwift because they find other people there real time. And as long as we have data to support that, we'll try to kind of corral and you know, make sure that there's enough population on a course. I've already heard comments about Richmond, you know, on when it's quiet, it's you know, even with 100 riders, it feels quiet because there's so much space there. So I think the community is telling us that they want to be in a space where there are other people. And when it gets too crowded, that's when we need to really open it up for other courses or other tracks.
Sure. How do you decide which features to roll out in which order?
So we do listen to the community. We test different things. And if the test is successful, we'll keep it. If it's not successful, we might even retire it. But it's really about engagement. You know, every time I go on Zwift, I ask myself, is this still fun? If it's not fun, we need to ask ourselves, you know, why. But in terms of the things that we have in our roadmap, it's a very, very long list, from small features to very big features. And it ranges not just the game. There's also the mobile app, and that's going to be a very, very important social tool for us.
Sure. What are the next three things on the roadmap, Eric?
So there's no surprise, there's no secret about the new track that we're building on Motopia. So that's under construction, and we'll unveil that in December. We're making further changes to the mobile app to make it easier for people to find each other and follow each other. Make it easier for you to give ride-ons, which is, from what we can tell and the data that we're collecting, is very, very popular, and it's motivating for. The riders who are on the cusp of doing their metric ride or the Imperial Century ride, they get rained on with ride-ons, and it's encouraging because I know what it's like to do a metric. And Imperial Century, those are hard, hard rides. Several hours, and to have that kind of encouragement from the community, of course it's going to keep you motivated to you know, get to that. So social is very important. The third, we're, of course, listening to the community about the things that would make events much easier to organize, to execute, and it's on the list. It's a very important thing, and I would say that that's two part. The first is that we have to build a way to corral the group, so that people can have. You know, it's easier to start together, and there's some sort of timer, and then we go off together. That is high on the priority after the. After the new extension to Watopia. So that will enable, you know, all of the races or the club rides or to happen in a much more controlled way. And I think what will follow after that will be results. And sure. Once we have that, I think we'll take some of the workload off the community that's been working extremely hard to both organize, manage and report on the results, I think once we have that, we will make a much bigger push to create organized rides. I think that it may not happen this year, but next year I could see a race happen, some sort of event every hour on the hour. Yeah. Happening on Zwift.
Yeah. Now, those two pieces are of particular interest to me and anybody who races, and indeed people who take part in group rides. And I'm going to push you on this because people would want me to. Do you think that could happen as soon as perhaps January?
I would say in January, you will see the ability to corral the group to start an event without the timer. I think that would be the first step. And that's probably the most important, because how many people really care about results? It's probably the big popular races, right? The Tuesday and Thursday night races. I think it's just really easier for a small group of even a dozen riders to start together. And so we'll focus on that. So, but in terms of having full support for racing, I would say it's probably February. That's being realistic.
Okay. Well, it's brave of you to put dates on these things, because I'm sure people realise how difficult it can be to keep to a schedule to do these quite complicated pieces. What do you think the maximum number of riders we will see on the platform at any one time will be this winter? What would be your guess?
So we've seen already about almost 800. If I were to guess, I would say by January you might see close to 2,000.
Wow.
At peak. And so for us, we have to plan, you know, will it get too crowded on Watopia with 2,000 riders? Probably. So that's why we're working on new tracks within Watopia. I think 2,000 people could comfortably fit even on the Richmond course. Richmond is a big course. It's 10 miles, the wide roads. So I'm not bothered by that. So we're looking, our strategy is to add more tracks and to create new feature courses like a Richmond course. And we'd like to swap in different courses to just keep the community together. But as soon as we feel that, you know, one map can't support the entire community at peak hours, we'll then start offering multiple courses at the same time.
You've been fantastically generous with your time. I think it will be absolutely fascinating for people to get this level of insight into what goes on behind the scenes at Zwift. Eric, thank you very much indeed for contributing to the Zwiftcast.
Thank you very much, Simon.
And that is that for episode one. I hope you've enjoyed it. I tried to make it the length of what I think an average ride on the island or Richmond lasts, so hopefully it'll be a good listen on the trainer. I'd love to hear suggestions for future episodes. One of the easiest ways to contact me is on my blog page, which is zwiftcast.com. You'll also find me in the Facebook groups. So if you're training, push on a little harder. Thanks for listening.